This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know around here we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to school to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million. You know, sometimes it's what's not said that really matters. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Risnell. It is Wednesday today, 3 May. Good as always to have you along, everybody. Fed Chair Jay Powell's press conferences, of which there was one today, they get all the attention. But the central bank is a firm believer in the written word, too. And after every meeting, the Federal Open Market Committee puts out a statement that is parsed to the nth degree for whatever message the Fed might be trying to send. Sometimes it's just a single word that has changed. Sometimes, like today, it's a whole sentence that just disappears.
You will have noticed that in the statement from March, we had a sentence that said the committee anticipates that some additional policy firming may be appropriate.
We did indeed notice exactly what the Fed said back in March was this. The committee anticipates that some additional policy firming may be appropriate in order to attain a stance of monetary policy that is sufficiently restrictive to return inflation to 2% over time. In other words, we think, the Fed said, we are going to have to keep on raising rates. Again, that was back in March. Here now is Powell today.
That sentence is not in the statement anymore. We took that out.
Select all, delete.
And instead, we're saying that in determining the extent to which additional policy firming may be appropriate to return inflation to 2% over time, the committee will take into account certain factors.
So that's a big deal. Additional firming, that is, raising interest rates more, may, emphasis may, be appropriate, or it may not.
So that's a meaningful change, that we're no longer saying that we anticipate. And so we'll be driven by incoming data, meeting by meeting, and, you know, we'll approach that question at the June meeting.
That's the headline from this meeting, really, aside from the much expected quarter of a point rate hike, that even if Powell didn't actually say the words out loud, the Fed might be ready to take a pause on raising interest rates. Couple of other things of note here. Number one, banking specifically, given everything all the way back to SVB, are we through the worst of it?
There were three large banks, really, from the very beginning that were at the heart of the stress that we saw in early March, the severe period of stress. Those have now all been resolved, and all the depositors have been protected. I think that the resolution and sale of First Republic kind of draws a line under that period of is an important step toward drawing a line under that period of severe stress.
One will note here that an important step toward drawing the line under that period of severe stress is not, yeah, the worst is past us. Speaking of the worst and extra Fed item number two here, the debt limit.
We shouldn't even be talking about a world in which the U.S. doesn't pay its bills. It just shouldn't be a thing. And again, I would just say no one should assume that the Fed can really protect the economy and the financial system and our reputation globally from the damage that such an event might inflict.
I mean, I'm just going to leave that right there. Big meeting at the White House on the debt limit, May the 9th. On Wall Street today, things were fine until Chair Powell made it clear that while the Fed might be getting ready to pause on interest rate hikes, a cut in interest rates is not on the table. We will have the details when we do the numbers. Chair Powell got a couple of three questions today about Silicon Valley Bank, what went wrong with regulating and supervising it, and next steps after that internal report the Fed did that pointed the finger firmly at the Fed. Amidst the 118 riveting pages on interest rate risk and enhanced prudential standards, you'll find this sentence in a letter from Fed Vice Chair for Supervision Michael Barr, the guy in charge of that investigation. More than a decade of banking system stability and strong performance by banks of all sizes, Barr wrote, may have led bankers to be overconfident and supervisors to be too accepting. So very much banking regulation came out of the 2008 financial crisis, and for a good while, it did seem to be working. So what happened? Marketplace's Matt Levin has that one.
Columbia Law professor Catherine Judge couldn't wait for the Barr report release. For bank regulation nerds, it was kind of like when those Harry Potter fans used to sleep outside of Barnes & Noble before the latest novel dropped. Judge says it was a good read, although SVB and the Chamber of Regulatory Failure did feel like a rerun.
You keep hoping and thinking things are going to change, and then you look at what actually happens, and the characters all stay the same, and their character flaws remain as present as ever.
It's that cliche regulatory pendulum, a financial crisis, then regulation, then easing the regulation, then another crisis. After 2008, Congress and the Fed decided more banks needed stronger stress testing. And then a decade later, Congress and the Fed said, meh, maybe we overdid it. Banks under $250 billion in assets will back off.
SVB was among the large regional banks that really should have been engaging in stress testing and wasn't.
But banking regulation is also just hard because often you're using the last financial crisis as a blueprint for the next one. Saleh Omarova is a professor at Cornell Law.
The Dodd-Frank Act targeted the range of specific problems that were the cause of the 2008 crisis, subprime mortgage and mortgage-related bonds.
And not so much good old-fashioned Fed rate hikes and their impact on bank balance sheets. It's important to remember that most 2008-era regulations on bigger banks are still there and working, says Greg Felberg at the Yale Program on Financial Stability.
The capital that we have, even if it's going to be rockier in the banking system, is much better than it was before the global financial crisis. So banks are better prepared.
Felberg says most banks are also just doing better risk management than SVB was, with or without regulators. I'm Matt Levin for Marketplace.
We, along with all the other business and economic journalists, various and sundry politicians, academic economists as well, are going to be watching real closely for more signs of a slowing labor market when we get the latest jobs report Friday morning. That will be, of course, the official number from the Department of Labor. Today, though, some related employment data for you. It has been the case the past couple of years that when people switched jobs, as a whole lot of people have, right, they have been getting pretty nice pay increases, especially in lower-paying jobs where it's been tough for companies to find enough workers. Well, that seems to be changing. According to ADP this morning, that's the payroll processing company, people aren't getting quite the same kind of pay bumps anymore. Marketplace's Samantha Fields reports.
It's pretty much always been the case that a good way to get a raise is by finding a new job at a different company. But in the last couple of years especially, people have been able to make a lot more by switching jobs. Elizabeth Jacobs at the Urban Institute says after several decades of wages being stagnant,
it was really exciting to see that happening.
But now the pace of that wage growth is slowing down. According to ADP's data, people who switched jobs in April got a pay bump that was about 7% less than those who switched in March.
If you're a worker, it's obviously not a good thing if your wages aren't as high.
But if you're talking about the broader economy, Neela Richardson at ADP says it is a good sign.
The fact that pay gains are decelerating means that demand and supply are coming into better balance.
More people are coming into the labor force. Employers are having an easier time finding workers. Hiring is still strong, and wages are still growing, just not quite as quickly as they have been.
This is the best report you could possibly hope for from the private sector. Strong job gains, moderating wage growth. That's good news for both GDP growth and good news for moderating inflation.
There's no way to know at this point whether all this softening in the labor market and slowing of wage gains will be a good thing long term, says Catherine Ann Edwards at RAND.
Everything that should happen as we are coming out of a recession and a recovery and moving into a normal business cycle is happening now. But those types of slowdowns are also the things that happen at the end of a business cycle when we're entering a recession. They look really similar.
So it can be hard to tell. But right now, in this moment, Ali Bustamante at the Roosevelt Institute says it does feel like the labor market is in a sweet spot.
I think the biggest takeaway when we look at the moderation of and deceleration of wage growth over the past year is looking at an economy that is really stable right now.
More stable, he says, than it's been for several years. I'm Samantha Fields for Marketplace.
Coming up,
on average, we're getting somewhere about 1,000 tons per day.
That is a whole lot of milk cartons, gang. But first, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrials off 270 points today, 0.8%, finished at 33,414. The NASDAQ gave up 55 points, about 0.5%, 12,025. The S&P 500 slid 28 points, 0.7%, 4,090. Again, you can trace that just about right on the clock to where Jay Powell said, yeah, no cuts coming up. Starbucks said today it expects its earnings to not grow as quickly in the third quarter. Shares cooled down almost 9.2% today. Wingstop flew 9.3% higher. The chicken wing restaurant chain projects strong sales growth this year. Bonds rose, yield on the 10-year T-note down 3.35%. You're listening to Marketplace.
Looking for the highest interest rate on your cash? At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's a higher rate than Robinhood, a higher rate than SoFi, a higher rate than Marcus, a higher rate than Wealthfront, frankly, a higher rate than Capital One, a higher rate than Ally, a higher rate than Barclays, a way higher rate than Bank of America and Chase, a higher rate than Citi, Wells Fargo, Discover, and it's a higher rate than American Express, too. So if you want to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash, check out public.com. We can't say it's the highest interest rate, but it's pretty darn up there. This is paid for by Public Investing, 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
And now a word from our sponsors at Betterment. Do you want your money to dream big? Do you want your money to be a total self-starter? Are you annoyed that your money doesn't work hard enough? Don't worry. Betterment is here to help. Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Their automated technology is built to help maximize returns, meaning when you invest with Betterment, your money can auto-adjust as you get closer to your goal, rebalance if your portfolio gets too far out of line, and your dividends are automatically reinvested. That can increase the potential for compound returns. In other words, your money is breaking a sweat while you can be breaking bread. You'll never picture your money the same way again. Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. While J.P. Morgan's takeover of First Republic was largely financial, right? Billions of dollars in loans and securities and deposits. It was also, in a sense, a real estate deal because among the assets being transferred are all of First Republic's bank branches. And there's going to be some overlap, too. Bloomberg did some analysis that shows the vast majority of First Republic's full-service branches are within a mile of existing Chase branches. Chase isn't saying yet what it plans to do with all that real estate, but in an online banking world like the one we live in, what does make people go to a bank IRL anyway? Marketplace's Stephanie Hughes went to find out.
Much like a pub, a bank has its regulars. Dwayne Brinkley is a security officer at a Chase branch in downtown Baltimore. Standing outside, he sees some people at least once a week.
And depending on what's good with them, right, you might see them in the same day as well. If the money's good, you'll see them in the same day.
Brinkley says a lot of these frequent customers are business owners, including 24-year-old Chris Watson, who gives Brinkley a quick hug. Watson's here at least three times a week and came today to deposit $1,500 from a customer who paid him in cash.
It's going to be quick and easy. They give you the deposit slip. You just fill it out, give them the cash, boom.
Watson runs a trucking and logistics company and manages a few Airbnbs.
I don't really like keeping cash on me at all.
He says he also makes withdrawals, gets cashier's checks, drops off money orders, all things that are hard to do online. And there's value for the bank in getting people to come in, says Jamie Peters of Maryville University in St. Louis.
This is a customer-based business. And in a lot of ways, it's become much more important to have quality customer service in banking because it's such a commodity product, especially on the retail side.
Peter says a lot of people open accounts in person, and some still use safe deposit boxes. Others only use cash and have to go to a teller to get the exact bills they need.
They tend to like certain dollar amounts and single dollars, $5, $10, that type of thing.
There are fewer places to do this now. The number of bank branches in the U.S. peaked in 2009 at nearly 86,000, according to the FDIC. That's dropped about 16% since then to almost 72,000. And Peter says when there's an acquisition, like with Chase and First Republic, some consolidation is inevitable and customers will adapt.
We will cross streets to get to a bank branch.
Peters also says not all in-person interactions happen at the branch itself. Some bankers make a point of visiting their commercial clients in person, too, both to do business and to keep up relationships. In Baltimore, I'm Stephanie Hughes for Marketplace.
One of the hazards of making radio outside a studio is this.
You can kind of hear the noise in the background.
So we're going to slide over there in a minute, and then we're going to slide back here.
A couple of weeks ago, I did an interview with Rael Johnson,
Vice President of Resource Recovery for Athens Services.
And
Johnny Stevenson, General Manager, Sun Valley MRF, here in the city of Sun Valley, California.
MRF, that's MRF. It's shorthand for Materials Recovery Facility. When you toss something into a blue recycling bin, it winds up here.
We sort through blue barrel or source-separated recyclable items, select all the good stuff, and recycle it back into the marketplace.
This is the package economy.
Johnny, how much stuff comes through here on a daily basis?
On average, we're getting somewhere about 1,000 tons per day.
How many trucks is that, right? I saw a bunch of trucks coming in and out. How many trucks?
About 250 trucks a day.
From all over L.A., basically?
From parts of Los Angeles on the north end and the west end as well.
Athens Services, the company Rael and Johnny work for, is among the biggest recycling companies in Southern California. It contracts with cities and private companies to haul the stuff in their blue bins away.
It comes in a sanitation truck that we see going around the streets. Then what happens?
Loads dumped on the ground.
Literally on the ground.
On the cement floor.
That seems very low tech, I'm just saying.
It's a little bit of brute force, a lot of technology right afterwards.
Rows of conveyor belts zipping empty milk jugs and bits of cardboard and laundry detergent containers around. And on an 80-degree day, you can kind of smell it.
So let's look at this person right here. She's sorting something that's coming on a conveyor belt. Is this after somebody's had a look at it? How does it wind up here, I guess, is my question.
Oh, all kinds of stuff has happened prior to this young lady seeing the material. So we've looked at the material by shape. We've looked at the material by size.
When you say we, who's we? Is that a person or is it a machine?
The equipment.
After the trucks empty out right onto that cement floor,
It's all sent through equipment that separates the cardboard from the aluminum and the different kinds of plastic from each other.
A light signature looking down at the material tells a blower that, yeah, I want that because it's a PET bottle as an example. Blows it further to a quality control station where this young lady's standing right now, where she upgrades it to make it meet market quality.
Market quality. Talk to me about the market. I'm jumping ahead a little bit in the flow, but once you guys get it, I saw a bundler down there, a baler, right? So once you get it all sorted, it gets baled, and then what happens to it?
Yep, that's correct. So we're selling it as a commodity. So we're taking a material that was a waste, and we're now upgrading it to a commodity.
Remember, your waste is the commodity here. This company sorts it and then packs it down into a cube for shipping.
Sell it to the open market where it gets flaked and made into another container.
When you look at our waste stream, how are we doing?
That's a tough one because things have changed. Economics have changed, especially international political policies with China and other folks.
Yeah, we'll get there in a minute. China's a key part
of
this.
So, you know, I'd say we're doing okay. Technology is helping us. It's making it safer. This is a very dangerous business. We're the seventh most dangerous industry in the country.
Talk to me for a second about China. I did a bunch of interviews 4, 5, 6 years ago as China was saying, we don't want American waste anymore. We don't want your recyclables. How big a challenge was that for you? Because that was a big deal.
That was huge. It was huge. Somewhat self-inflicted. I think we were sending some...
It's very loud in here. Self-inflicted?
Somewhat self-inflicted. We were selling some pretty undesirable material over that way, and it came back and got us. So now we have to step up our efforts. We need to make a higher quality product, and so that's what we're doing.
Take me down and show me that autonomous AI thing, because that's frankly a little scary looking.
Sure.
I'll follow you.
All right.
It looks like one of those alien spaceships from the War of the Worlds or something. Mechanical arms grabbing stuff as it goes by. Johnny Stevenson, the MRF's general manager, does the show and tell for me.
So this is Max AI. There is a light source that's looking at the material as it comes across. You'll see that it's suctioning up those items and then blowing it down.
That's so amazing. So look, so first of all, it's a lot of plastic coming through here.
That's correct.
And it's letting all the plastic bottles go through. But then a big chunk of styrofoam came through.
Uh-huh.
And look, even I know styrofoam's not recyclable. And it picked it up and said, no, you're out of here.
It was able to pick it up, right?
That's crazy.
And it recognizes that, saying, hey, I remember you should not be here. And discards it into the
There's another piece of styrofoam. You guys, styrofoam is not recyclable. Man. How much does this machine cost?
I'm not going to tell you.
Is it $100,000?
It's more than that.
More than that?
It's more than that. But it's taking the place of two humans. Humans are fairly expensive.
Well, and it's going faster, too, right? I mean, this thing's bopping right along.
It is going faster. But the interesting thing about robots is they pick consistently.
Where's Johnny? Can you hire enough people? Is labor an issue for you right now?
Labor's challenging, especially in the more skilled positions.
Like what?
Heavy equipment operators. We have large pieces of heavy equipment that move the material. Those are challenging to find.
Okay, wait. Hey, Johnny, wait. I was watching this woman earlier, and I was trying to figure out the rhyme or reason of what she was doing.
Yes.
And there was a bunch of green laundry detergent bottles that went in one of these things.
Yes.
And then there was a bunch of red laundry detergent bottles that went in a different container.
Sure.
And I was like, oh, okay, it's sorting by color. But then she took a green one and put it in the red bin.
So this is, they are not necessarily separating by color. They're separating by the plastic type.
She has to know on a like a five-second look, maybe a three-second look, what kind of plastic it is.
Exactly, yes.
You were going to say something?
I was going to say, this is just what artificial intelligence does. So just like this person has targets and landmarks that she's making a decision, AI does the exact same thing.
Right. All right, let's get down to the bottom.
All right.
We walk down some metal stairs into a big open space with forklifts zipping around. Oh, there it is. Okay, so we're downstairs. We got bales of everything. We got cardboard coming out of the baler. We got a zillion tin cans crushed into a cube over there. How much does one of these bales weigh?
Somewhere about 1,500 pounds. When they leave here, they're going to go to the port.
Yep.
And they'll sit there, wait for the next ship that's going to send it to the next end user.
The end user of the bales leaving this facility are factories in China and Korea and all over the world, actually. Factories that make more stuff that ultimately comes right back.
Does it ever occur to you guys that you're doing this here and in a year and a half, maybe 2 years, fundamentally the same fiber, the paper fiber, is going to be coming through this plant again? You could see that chunk of aluminum coming through.
Yep, that's absolutely right.
That's kind of the point, right?
It's really cool.
Exactly.
So here's the ender. You ready? Is this enough?
Enough for what?
Enough to take care of everything that we're producing on this planet without busting the planet at the seams. We need a zillion of these factories.
You know, it all depends on economics, right? We experience when the economy, especially global economy, starts to sag, people aren't buying TVs. When they don't buy TVs, they don't need a box. They don't buy as much cardboard, or the value of the cardboard falls.
I should have asked this question earlier. I'm not saying one way or the other whether we're in a recession or going to have a recession, right? Other people are going to figure that out. But you know, you can see it coming through here. You can see a recession. You can see a slowdown.
I would say our business is recession resistant, but not proof. We notice a change on the inbound because people's purchasing changes. We notice it changes on the outbound because commodity values fluctuate. Going back to what I said before, if there's a huge market for recyclable goods, it'll drive these things forward and more people will want or need to get into it.
Really appreciate your time.
Is that it?
Yeah.
If you want to see this place in action, and I know you do, we've got a video. It's up on our YouTube channel, Marketplace APN. This final note on the way out today, just because we mentioned it when it happened, that line in the minutes of the March Fed meeting, the last one, where the staff of the central bank was predicting a mild recession. Powell was asked about that today.
The staff's forecast is, so let me say, start by saying that that's not my own most likely case, which is really that the economy will continue to grow at a modest rate this year.
Well, yeah, okay, but...
Staff produces its own forecast, and it's independent of the forecasts of the participants, which include the governors and the Reserve Bank presidents, of course. And we think this is a healthy thing, that the staff is writing down what they really think. They're not especially influenced by what the governors think, and vice versa. The governors are not taking what the staff says and just writing that down. So it's actually good that the staff and individual participants can have different perspectives.
So I guess we wait till the minutes of this meeting come out in 3 weeks to see what the staff thinks now, right? All right, here's your moment of economic context. A super quick data point that tends in favor of the Fed staff's mild recession theory, no matter what the chair says. Oil the past couple of days, Brent North Sea crude, the global benchmark, down almost 7%. A slowing economy, less demand. All y'all know that theory, right? Our media production team includes Brian Allison, Jake Cherry, Drew Jostad, Gary O'Keefe, Jeff Peters, Charlton Thorpe, Juan Carlos Torrado, and Becca Weinman. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.